Welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake joined by Matt as always. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. The Real lost, but the Royals won their game. You know, I was pretty Christ impressed.
You're gonna have to explain that one. I don't even get that. I'm guessing there's
but you know who Christ impress is, right?
I've heard I know she plays for the U.S. and the Real or the women's soccer team in Utah.
Yes, yeah, we just traded for her and she got her first goal and she had an assist and it was good. And so just because in the second 3/4 of her name sounds like impressed.
Sweet, yeah,
so it's a pun that I'm going to be using a lot.
Well, I'm just so excited for that pun to hear it all the time. So we got a lot to catch up on. So last week we had the Clark Brown from the BYU track team come on, and then we were talking about when we were going to record this episode between a couple of things, and also the World Cup. We just wanted to wait till the group stage was over. So here we are today. We're recording July 1st. We're going to talk about the World Cup, where we're at, also NBA free agency, and we haven't done an episode since the NBA draft, so we're going to recap that a little bit as well. Let's start with the World Cup. So today, where we're at, we're in the round of 16. Yesterday, Uruguay and France beat Argentina and Portugal, respectively. And then Croatia beat Denmark. Russia beat Spain. So those are the only teams who advanced so far to the quarterfinals. Matt, where do you want to start with the World Cup?
Just to say that as much as a Messi-Ronaldo matchup would have been fun, the only thing that I wanted from this World Cup was for Argentina not to win. As long as Argentina didn't win, I was going to be happy. So now, whatever happens, I'm going to be happy with the World Cup. So good news for me.
Yeah, I'm so happy Argentina lost. Do you want to have a Ronaldo Messi debate for a minute, or you think we've covered that enough? I feel like we're both on Team Ronaldo.
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, I will say, neither of those two have scored in the knockout round of the World Cup. And I don't really think that's everything. And you know what I mean? Because, like, I mean, if it's very possible for a good player to go through and have a good game and not score. I will say that Messi has played 8 knockout round games, and I believe Ronaldo has played 2. So when we say that, that's a little bit different. But yeah, I mean, Portugal clearly the worst team. People are saying Argentina's not as good this year. Agüero is 30, Di Maria is 30, Marcos Rojo is 28, Mascherano's 34, which is old, but he can still be a competent soccer player. He was on Barcelona and getting playing time up until January. So, you know, don't tell me that Argentina doesn't have a good team this year. They have a great team this year. They were ranked top 3 in the world. I think they're ranked number 2.
Yeah, Higuain's only 30. Gonzalo Higuain.
Yeah, exactly. They have enough players where they can do well. And if you're telling me that they lost to France, then they should have won their group against Croatia, who are good but not as talented as Argentina is.
Messi should have converted his penalty against Iceland.
Yeah, there you go. Then you end up playing Denmark today, which isn't nearly as difficult.
Yeah, I honestly feel like you said, if you take both Messi and Ronaldo off Argentina and Portugal, Argentina is a top 10 team in the world, and Portugal probably to maybe doesn't qualify for the World Cup at all.
Right.
There's maybe 1 or 2 players who would start for Argentina, I think, on Portugal's squad.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Because, like, I mean, I think Pepe plays for Real Madrid too, but, like, I haven't heard of... And Rui Patricio is a good goalkeeper, but I haven't heard of any of the other dudes. I've heard of a bunch of people on Argentina. We just listed a bunch.
Yeah, that's just off the top of your head. Like, Pepe would start. I'm thinking Quaresma, I mean, depending on the position and everything, he could maybe get some playing time. But Portugal's roster is not very good.
Yeah. Dude, did you notice that as soon as Quaresma got in that, like, he had the ball, like, 70% of the time that Portugal had the ball and was just kind of dribbling around and trying to cross it in?
Yeah, I was so frustrated. I mean, his shot, and I think it was one of the group stage games, but his goal that he did have was incredible.
Yeah. Where
that reverse bend on it. Like, he's a good player, but, like, it's just not a very functional roster or a functional team, honestly. So, like, yeah. Ronaldo literally does so much. And I've been hearing that Messi gets too much crap. And I feel the opposite way. I feel like he doesn't get enough blame. Where I feel like in Argentina, he gets all the blame, which is how much he should get. Because if we're going to talk about him being the greatest in the world, then it is on him to score.
Yeah, I mean, we are holding him to an impossibly high standard, but it's a standard that Pele and Maradona lived up to. And if you're going to tell me that he's better than these dudes, then these are reasons why he's not. But
yeah, and no matter how well he does at Barcelona, which is incredible, no one in Argentina cares about that at all. And like, especially with Ronaldo winning the Euro Cup, Messi's never going to have that. Like, that championship that Ronaldo won in a harder... Europe is harder to win than South America with a worse team. Ronaldo won, and Messi didn't. He also didn't even score. In those games against Chile, and then the years before when they lost to Uruguay and Brazil, he didn't score in any of those games. In the World Cup games where they've been eliminated, Messi didn't score.
Yeah. I would say that the South American region is harder simply because... Even though there's more good teams in Europe, there are very few bad teams in South America. So you're gonna have another really, really good team in your group stage and stuff. So I just think by virtue of how many quality teams there are, just compared to how many teams are total, South America's harder. But I mean, the point remains. I mean, Portugal is just a worse national team historically and talent wise. Than Argentina. But anyway, if you haven't caught on, we're not huge fans of Messi.
No, we are not. But I am hopping... This World Cup thing is kind of going to be all over the place a little bit. I'm hopping on the Croatia bandwagon, dude. They are so good. Like, I knew they had Modric, but I didn't realize that Mandzukic, who plays for Juventus, was Croatian. Also... Rakitic, I think his name is pronounced, who plays for Barcelona. I didn't realize he was Croatian. Their roster is stacked, and they looked really good against Denmark, and that was the worst game in the entire tournament so far for them. They got a really very possible run to all the way to the World Cup final.
Well, yeah, because in this next round, they've got Russia, and if they beat Russia, they can go to the semifinal. Russia obviously has... surprised us, but yes, I mean, if they beat Russia, then to get to the final, they would beat who we think is Colombia or England, probably, although Sweden, I think, has looked a lot better than people thought they were going to look as well.
Yeah, that Sweden-Switzerland game is going to be I think it's going to be a good game, but it's not going to be like high scoring up and down. It's going to be very like sound defensive, everything like that. I would love to see Colombia play Croatia because Colombia is so fun to watch and they're so attacking, and Croatia's defense is they allowed one goal in the World Cup and they allowed four goals all through qualifying. Mm-hmm. So putting that with Colombia and James Rodriguez and Quintero and Radamel Falcao in their offense and how free flowing and fun Colombia is to watch, I would love to. That might be like my favorite game to watch possible remaining.
Yeah, that'd be a fun game. The other thing with that Croatia and Denmark game is that might have been the best penalty shootout that I've ever seen. Like, it had all the leg saves from goalkeepers. You just had Smigel save Modric's penalty, like, just in extra time, like, 5 minutes before. Like, that was a super entertaining penalty shootout.
No, that was, especially because the Spain-Russia one, they were all just making it. No, you got to have some misses in there to keep it entertaining.
Yeah, and it wasn't like anybody just missed the goal. The goalies just made really, really good saves.
Yeah, the goalies were... I forgot what I was going to say. But yeah, no, that Croatia-Denmark penalties. You caught the Spain-Russia penalty shootout, correct?
Uh-huh.
Did you see... This is one play that I think I was pretty upset about. I was cheering for Spain... just because it's a really pretty country. But it was, I think, 115, 120 minutes. Like, game's almost over. Spain had a free kick into the box. Sergio Ramos and Piqué both got, like, tackled, basically. Like, Piqué got his arm wrapped around his neck, and Ramos just got thrown down. And they didn't even go to video review. I don't want to talk about VAR a whole lot, but Spain ends up losing in penalties for that. They were dominating the game. They had about 75% possession. They set a record, I think, for like 50 years for most completed passes, which doesn't mean anything in the long run. Like, you got to score, but they were dominating that game. Then that penalty they didn't get called, I feel, if I'm a Spain fan, I'm very upset right now at how that game ended up.
Yeah, you know, and what I will say is, you know, we kind of, people like to joke about Russia paying the refs. We know they paid FIFA to host the World Cup at all, but it is just intimidating on this international stage to call a penalty in that situation against the host country. Like, that is a legitimately scary thing to do. Like, I'm not sure I'm blowing that whistle.
No, I mean, that is a valid point. In the Copa America 2015, it was Chile and Argentina were tied in the final, and Argentina had a debatable, like, they got fouled, could have been called a penalty in the box, and the ref called a whistle.
I don't think it could have been called a penalty.
Well, I don't think it was a penalty, but, like, he had the opportunity to, but he didn't call the whistle because it was in Santiago, Chile, 120th minute, like 0-0. You call a penalty, and that's how Chile loses the game. That's going to have some major consequences for you.
Yeah, no, I'm not blowing that whistle. So
I feel like Spain got gypped. Let's talk a little bit about the Brazil-Mexico match. I think is really intriguing. A, because I'm high on the Mexico. I said ever since the group stages that they had a really good shot to go far in the tournament. Obviously, they're playing Brazil, so that's going to be a tough game. I don't think Brazil has looked great this entire World Cup, like these group stages. Even in qualifying, they were, point-wise, I think they won South America, if I'm not mistaken, but I still don't think they ever looked outstanding.
Yeah, they ran away with South America in qualifying.
I mean, they did it very unimpressively, if that makes sense. And they haven't looked good so far in the World Cup. I think Mexico has a legitimate shot. It's tomorrow morning, so July 2nd.
Yeah. What I will say is I think Mexico have, and we talked about this when we did our preview, I think, but Mexico has something to prove, I think, because people always talk about, oh, they choke when they get in the big games and they've fired, you know, like every coach they've had, like really, really frequently. They've just had so many different national team head coaches and they've got this reputation for just losing these big games in big moments. And so I think that helps them. And, you know, if they were to win this game, obviously, you know, they want to win. But I think that they've, you know, kind of proved that they're a serious soccer nation. And even if they did lose to Belgium in the next round, I don't think anybody would really feel like they should require more from Mexico. So I think, you know, that and them being excited is going to make it a really, really good match, although I think Brazil is I've been very, very impressed with Brazil, so I disagree with you. So they're, I think, a much better team. I think they play really well. They haven't had a great group stage, but, you know, that's pretty frequent where the eventual champion of the World Cup ends up losing a game in the group stage, so I'm less concerned about that.
I mean, I'm just biased against Brazil. I will say that, but I think Mexico is a really good shot. And this is the round they always lose in the round of 16. So it'll be really interesting to see. Belgium, we can talk about quickly. I don't think they're going to lose to Japan. So I think that Belgium, either Mexico or Brazil, I think Belgium and France, in terms of pure talent, I think Belgium's second. But like they're right with France in terms of like just actual talent on the roster. So Belgium versus either one of those teams. And Belgium, France in the semis, that would be, if that ends up happening. Really, honestly, any of that whole bracket would be interesting. I love watching France play Belgium versus Brazil or Mexico, and any of those teams versus France is going to be really, really exciting. France is so fun to watch. Did you watch either the France-Argentina or the Uruguay-Portugal game? I know it was like super early yesterday.
Yeah, no, I watched the Portugal game is the one I watched.
Did you see Cavani's second goal, Edison Cavani's second goal, where Bennett, like, one touched it and bent it in, like, around the key. He was on the left side, bent it in on the right. That was one of the best shots I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, Cavani had two great goals. I mean, people kind of forget he's on that team because of Suarez, but, like, he's, you know.
I think he's better than Suarez. I don't think Suarez is good at all, but I think Cavani's by far the best player on that team.
Well, I mean, Barcelona could have any point striker that they want, and they chose Suarez. Like, he's obviously good.
I mean, I don't think... I mean, he's not bad. Like, I know he's better than me, is what I'm saying, but I think he's drastically overrated.
All right, well, you know, that is... That's what happens when you're biased against every South American team that's not Chile.
Well, here's the thing, Matt, is we're going to find out how right I am, because Cavani's hurt his hamstring in the game. From what I've read, it looks like he's going to be out for like a month.
Yeah. There we end up with a Ronaldo Portugal situation, because, like, you know, who else plays for Uruguay? Like, Godin is pretty good, but he's a center back. So, you know, if Suarez doesn't have any help in the attack, then it's, you know, you expect him to be able to do something, but I mean, if they can really like truly just swarm around him, then, you know, it's not fair to expect him to score. I think
we're gonna find out. I thought before the Cavani injury that Uruguay, even before the World Cup, like, they had a good shot of having a good run. They're pretty, I hate to say it because you're right, they are a South American team, so I'm pretty biased against all of them. But I thought they, out of all the teams in South America, had a really good shot at making a run. But without Cavani, because he so does so much for them. And like you said, with, like, if it's just Suarez, it's going to be so easy for France to just pinpoint him on defense and let Pogba and Griezmann. And how do you say the teenager's name? Mbappe,
maybe? That's, I think, what I've heard.
Mbappe, we'll go with that. Like, they're just going to have a field day, I think, against Uruguay, just because France's defense, they're not going to have to do anything. They can just focus so hard on Suarez. It's going to lead to a lot of counterattacks, I feel like, for France in that match.
Yeah, no, that's what I think. I think France wins too. I think it's in Europe, so that helps. I mean, I think if we got a France-Belgium semifinal, that FIFA would consider that a win. I think they would be really excited about the talent of those two teams, you know, and then being so close to each other, I think that they'd be really excited about that match.
Yeah, I obviously don't. I imagine that's just because of proximity, as somewhat of a rivalry. I think France and Germany are the bigger ones, or France and Spain, but just because of proximity, they have to be. Yeah. So that would be exciting. I think that's the ideal semis, is France, Belgium, and then on the other side, Croatia. I would love to see Colombia on the other side. I think those semis and any combination of those teams in the finals, I think, would be extremely entertaining.
Yeah, no, I think it's good all the way through, because in that semifinal, like you said, you get Croatia, who people have really fallen in love with, or you get Russia, the host country, so that's always good. And then the other semifinalists, you're either getting a good European team, or you're getting Colombia, who's really exciting. I think if you were going to pick, you'd rather have Colombia and England over Sweden and Switzerland, but I think you're happy with any of those teams.
Yeah, I think for someone who's like not super into soccer, they would rather see England, just because that's a bigger name, especially in the United States. We hear like the English is the best league and everything like that. But like actual soccer, I would rather see Croatia or Colombia move on to eventually the finals.
Yeah.
Just entertainment wise. Let's wrap up the World Cup and move on to the NBA. Was there any, I think we covered a lot. Is there anything you wanted to mention? We didn't mention Germany losing in the group stages, so I was very wrong about that.
Yeah, I think I've said multiple times that I would be shocked if Germany didn't win this World Cup, and they just did not look like Germany.
Yeah, that was a different team from what we saw in the Confederations Cup. And even though they didn't win the Euros, like, their performance there.
Yeah, you know, like, they had the talent, and they just didn't show up. You know, it's really, really weird. But, I mean, a lot, that's kind of been the trend for defending World Cup champions. So I guess we shouldn't be too surprised. Just like I think we're not giving Russia enough credit for being the host country. I think that, you know, it makes a bigger difference than we realized.
South Africa was the only host country that never made it out of the group stage. So you're right. I didn't give Russia any credit, because in terms of actual FIFA rankings, they're either the worst or the second worst team just rated wise. So I didn't give them enough credit for having to host it or getting to host it, excuse me. So that's been my biggest surprise, is Russia getting out of that group and then beating Spain, even if it was on penalties. Like, I was talking in that game about how Spain was attacking the whole time and dominating the game, but I guess they weren't dominating it too much because Russia's defense was always there. They always got numbers back. Every time I thought Spain was going to score, Russia would have either just enough defenders or someone make a great play. So Russia did what they needed to do, and then they got it done in penalties. So,
yeah. Cool. Well, let's should we talk about the draft real quick?
Let's talk about the draft really quick. I want to talk about Luka Doncic. Matt, we're going to talk about Grayson Allen. My Duke guy got drafted by the Jazz. There's honestly a lot to talk about. I want to talk about how Mikal Bridges got traded from Philly to Phoenix. I actually met Mikal Bridges. We'll talk about that later. What do you want to start with?
Let's do the other teams really quick. I think that us two are much more interested in Grayson Allen than everything else. But I think that, you know, the Trae Young for Luka Doncic trade and the first round pick, I think that one is one we're going to look back in a few years and we're going to say one of those teams really, really screwed up. Which one do you think that was?
Oh, Atlanta. I think Atlanta and Phoenix and Sacramento screwed up. Doncic, I can go on a rant about him, but just as far as this trade, like Doncic and Dennis Smith Jr. in the backcourt for Dallas, that's going to be so fun to watch.
Yeah. So what position does he play? Is he like a point guard or a point forward? Or I haven't figured this out because obviously we haven't watched him playing in Spain.
He's like a point guard in the sense that James Harden is a point guard.
Yeah.
Kind of like a combo guard where like that's technically his position, but with Dennis Smith Jr., who is a true point guard, Doncic is going to be able to play off the ball. He's 6'8 is a thing. He's like 220. He can create.
Right, that's why I ask.
So I know it's huge, huh? So he can generate his own offense. He can play off the ball. But he's also, he runs the pick and roll extremely well. So him and Dennis Smith Jr., especially with DeAndre Jordan, who just signed with Dallas, they're going to be running a lot of pick and rolls, either 1-5 or 2-5. Doncic can switch. He can guard 1-4. He's not extremely athletic in the sense like his testing numbers are great, but he's one of those like deceivingly athletic guys where he's like, he knows how to control his body so well that even if he's not just flat out as fast or as quick as he can be, he's still really hard to guard just because he moves so well and understands like the time, like nuances of the game.
Yeah.
Doncic should have gone number one. He should have gone number two. He's going to be the best player in the draft. He's the best. He's 19. He won MVP of the EuroLeague against grown men in the Euro Cup, which is like the countries playing each other. In the summer of 2017, he played Ricky Rubio head up. He played Evan Fournier, who is French, who plays for Orlando head up. He also played Kristaps Porzingis head to head, and he played better than all three of them. So he's already shown as an 18-year-old he can outplay really good NBA starters. His team won the championship, and he won MVP in the second best league in the entire world. And DeAndre Ayton didn't show up against Buffalo. I know like Ben Simmons, that doesn't mean everything. Ben Simmons didn't even make the tournament and he's a good player, just for example. But we've seen what Doncic can do. I feel like teams just like overhype the Europe thing and like he's international. DeAndre Ayton's from the Bahamas, so he wasn't born in the United States. Luka Doncic became a professional when he was 13 years old. He moved from Slovenia to Real Madrid. So he's been a professional for 6 years already, playing for the best academy in the entire country, in the entire world, because the United States teams don't have academies necessarily. I just don't see the downside of picking him, especially I think Doncic is such a good fit. Phoenix does have a lot of wings with like Devin Booker, Josh Jackson, and Dragan Bender. But when you're playing teams like Houston and Golden State, that's what you need. You don't need a center who you don't want your number one pick have to take off the floor. Like, for example, in the Jazz-Houston series, there were times where Rudy Gobert, they had to take him off. As good as he is defensively, then DeAndre Ayton sucks at defense. So hopefully they can find a way to leave him on in Phoenix. But I think Doncic should have gone number one, and Phoenix is going to regret that for years.
Yeah, you know, I think that they drafted Ayton based on a relatively low floor and a high floor. And like you said, I think you think that Doncic probably has a higher floor and a higher ceiling. I think he certainly has a higher ceiling. than Ayton does. The thing that's interesting was with Trae Young, I feel like Trae Young is the player who, like, he's going to be Steph Curry or he's going to be a bust. And I don't think either of us think, you know, there's only one Steph Curry. I don't think we really see that happening again. But, you know, he does, if he can kind of figure out a niche where, and kind of figure out how to play like an Isaiah Thomas or a Steph Curry, he could be really, really good. And Atlanta's going to get a first round pick next year. The problem with that is that all of a sudden now you're looking at a starting lineup that has Dennis Smith Jr., Luka Doncic, Harrison Barnes, and DeAndre Jordan. So I'm not convinced that that first round pick next year is going to be very good.
It's not. And combine that with next year's draft is really bad. Obviously, I'm not watching like college seniors or like European prospects, but from everything I've listened to and read of like draft experts, this year's draft was so much deeper and more talented than the 2019 draft is going to be. So it's going to be a bad pick and a bad draft.
Yeah. Cause Zion Williamson's going to be in that draft probably, right?
Right.
But he's only one dude. That doesn't make a good draft. That's just, you hope you're the number one guy.
Yeah, right now he's the number one or two prospect, but teams aren't even sure because a lot of it is just his highlight for dunking. They're going to have to watch him in Duke to see if he'll actually be, you know, a functional NBA player, like how well he can shoot and play defense and everything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that is going to be interesting. I think Doncic probably should have gone number one, and I think that trade from the Mavericks is probably going to end up working really well, but speaking of Williamson and Duke, unless you've got other players in the top 10 that you want to talk about, I want to talk about Grayson Allen.
I got a couple players, not necessarily in the top 10, but we can talk about Grayson Allen. We're just kind of doing whatever.
Yeah, we'll say you're a couple of guys first.
Okay, well, yeah, I'll just go then. One thing, Colin Sexton going 8 to Cleveland, the point guard from Alabama, regardless of what LeBron does, he's a really good player. He's like one of the most athletic point guards. So I thought that was an interesting pick because Sexton, Trae Young, and Gilgeous Alexander from Kentucky were like the top three quote-unquote point guards. We didn't count Doncic as a point guard in that sense. And then Sexton went second out of those three. I thought that was really interesting. Mikal Bridges from Villanova he went 10th to Philly, but they traded him to Phoenix for Zaire Smith from Texas Tech, who went 16th. I just want to throw that out there because I met Mikal Bridges at the airport in Phoenix. He's very tall, really nice guy. So I hope he has a good career. Michael Porter Jr. Sorry, what?
I was going to say, did you hear that Michael Bridges' mom works for the Sixers?
Yeah, everybody was so excited. He's from actually Malvern, Pennsylvania, which is right by Philly. It's like where my company, like their headquarters are at. Went to Villanova, grew up a Sixers fan. So everybody was so excited that he got drafted by Philly. And then in the press conference, they find out he got traded to Phoenix.
So yeah, that's the thing. They let them do the press conference and the mom was talking about how blessed they are. And then they have to come in and say, oh, your coworker just traded your son because he thought he could get something better than your son.
Yeah. And the mom, they did. I mean, they got a 2021 unprotected first round pick, which belongs to Miami. So that could be top five pick. It could be like pick number 20. Like who knows how good Miami's going to be in 5 years. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I was like, and his mom isn't just like somebody, she's the head of human resources for the Philadelphia 76ers and the New Jersey Nets. So she's like a huge deal in that organization.
And how is she the head of human resources for the Sixers and the Nets?
So it's the same ownership group. Like how the Utah Jazz and the Salt Lake Bees have the same ownership group.
Do you mean the Devils?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say Nets?
Yeah, because I was like, how'd she go work for two basketball teams?
Sorry, yeah, I meant New Jersey, the Devils, the hockey team. My fault.
I got you. It was because you said New Jersey Nets, which is obviously where the Nets used to play. So, yeah. so that makes sense.
Yeah, so New Jersey Devils, Philadelphia 76ers. She's like the head of human resources. They traded her son. Michael Porter Jr. fell to Denver at 14, which I thought was a good pick for Denver. But I feel like he could have gone higher. Just I heard this is something I didn't hear till the day of the draft, but that he had like some character issues. So on top of playing two games in college and having like back surgery a couple times, teams started hearing he like wasn't that great a teammate and had some ego issues. So I think that's part of the reason why he fell. So I'm really interested to see where he goes, or not where he goes, but like how well he ends up being in Denver. Another player I want to talk about. I'm almost done. I was trying to get all my draft. I love the draft, so I'm just trying to get all this out really quick. Yeah. Walker, a guard out of Miami, top 10 talent, went 18 to San Antonio. So if you're a San Antonio fan, you're going through this Kawhi thing right now, I think that's kind of best case scenario that someone that talented, you can play along DeJounte Murray, I think, who DeJounte Murray, I'm super high on as a replacement for Tony Parker. He's never going to be a top, like, All-NBA or anything like that, but he can be an all-defensive, like, really good point guard playing with Lonnie Walker, who's more of a shooter and a natural scorer. That backcourt in San Antonio, I think, is going to be really good going forward. It's really young right now. The other thing, I think the Suns had a really good draft. They got DeAndre Ayton, who we talked about that, so not best they could have done. But they also got Mikal Bridges, and then their 31st pick, first pick of the second round, is Ili Okobo. I don't know how to pronounce his name, but he's French point guard. He was projected to go like top 20-ish, so like in the 20 to 30 range. They got him at 31. I think the Suns had the best overall draft. And I think Aaron Holiday, who went to Indiana at 23, if the Jazz didn't draft Grayson Allen, that's who I wanted them to draft, was Aaron Holiday if he was still available. So I think he's going to be a really good player in Indiana. We can talk about Grayson Allen. I got it all out.
Okay, that sounds like a plan. So yeah, and this, I know you just went through and talked a bunch, but you obviously, you know, are the Duke fan. You watch Grayson Allen a lot more than me. So I don't know. So yeah, what do you think?
I am really excited about this pick. So Grayson Allen, his freshman year, he won the national championship. He was on the team with Jahlil Okafor and Tyus Jones and Justice Winslow. So they were the four freshmen that came in. And Grayson Allen, those three, the first three, like, started and played big minutes. Grayson Allen, not so much. But the national championship game, he had 16 points. He was the big reason Duke won that game. In his recruiting class in high school, he won the dunk contest. So people look at him as like, oh, why he's going to be like J.J. Redick or just like a white shooter. And he's a good shooter, but he's extreme. Him and Dante DiVincenzo actually – both killed the combine. So it was really interesting, like kind of breaking stereotypes for us out there. But his sophomore year, he became like the lead off the ball, lead scorer, averaged like 21 points a game, I think. And then his junior and senior year, he was playing with Marvin Bagley and Wendell Carter and other big men, and they didn't really have a true point guard. So he got switched from a scoring role to kind of a facilitator role in offense, and that's not his natural position. So junior and senior, he didn't play as well as his sophomore year, but he got those skills. So fitting into the Jazz, I think I'm assuming the Jazz are going to keep Dante Exum. So we're still going to have Rubio and Mitchell start, but having someone like Grayson Allen who can come off and either play backup point guard or slide in with Mitchell and handle the ball, but he doesn't need the ball. I think he's better off the ball, like with cutting and back screens and even just he's good enough shooter to be a threat. That's just one more player where he's not going to get a huge minutes this year for the Jazz, but he can contribute right away. So I think Holiday would have been a really interesting pick. I think Holiday has a little bit of a higher ceiling than Grayson Allen did, but I think Grayson Allen can contribute this year and not every game, but there's going to be some games where he's really big for the Jazz, I think.
Yeah. No, I think that is why they picked him. I think there is less room for development, you know, partly because of his age, but I think they do see that he can come in and contribute right away. I think, you know, and like you, I like Aaron Holiday a little bit better, but I just think that with who the Jazz are, I think he fits in so much better, you know, because if Aaron Holiday is supposed to come in and be the backup point guard, then why are you paying Dante Exum all this money?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like Aaron Holiday, he is a true point guard, so we would have him and Exum and Holiday, and then Mitchell played a lot of point guard last year, especially when Rubio was out for some injury games. So point guard's not really a position of need right now, and Grayson Allen can play point guard, but he can play the two, or I think he'll be able to guard 1 through 3 on some nights. Yeah. 1 through 2 for sure, but being able to guard 1 through 3, so we could even have a lineup of like Mitchell, Rubio, and
Grayson Allen, and like Joe Ingles is off the floor, and maybe like we're playing like Thefalosha and Favors or Gobert the five, or like Direkpo the five. Like that'd be a really interesting small ball lineup for the Jazz, I think, especially later in the year.
Yeah, no, it gives them a lot of flexibility, and the reason I liked it is because they needed a scorer off the bench, because you know that was what Rodney Hood did, and Rodney Hood helped us out a lot. Obviously, you know, we won more games as you know, he left, because that, you know, backup power forward position, small forward that Jay Crowder fulfilled was, I think, more important. But I think having that back is going to be huge, because now, you know, you've got your defensive shooting guard in Royce O'Neal, who can also make some threes. And then you've got your offensive shooting guard, backup shooting guard in Grayson Allen. And then you can still have Royce O'Neal. You know, he's 6'6", I'm pretty sure. So, you know, he's can definitely guard threes. He really can even guard, I think, most fours. And so I think that just... And then if you're doing that, then you can have Jay Crowder out there as well. And so I just think, you know, it gives him a lot of flexibility. It gives him another way to get buckets. I think having him and Donovan Mitchell on the floor at the same time is going to be able to do some really interesting things, because both of those guys can drive and then kick it out to either the other one or, you know, a Joe Ingles or a Jay Crowder or anything. Or something like that. So I just think there's so many things that this offense is going to be able to do. And just because so many people are going to be able to play well off of the ball and all the passing they're going to be able to do. So I think that this is going to work out really well. And especially if he plays defense as well as they seem to think he can after watching him in the pre-draft workout, that I think is the only question. But if Dennis Lindsay thinks he can play defense, I think he can play defense.
Yeah, the thing with Duke is because they didn't have a lot of good defenders, they played a lot of zones. So for the last like 2 years, Grayson Allen hasn't really played man-to-man, but because he's so athletic with Quinn Snyder's scheme, I think he can step in and play effective defense. I think he's an interesting mix of, like you said, Rodney Hood and Joe Ingles in terms of skill set, like just kind of a little bit of both of those guys. So it's going to be really interesting to watch. I think with the Jazz going forward, one thing I'm excited to see is Tony Bradley's development, because I think our power forward depth, like I think Jay Crowder is good at the fourth in small ball lineups, but I feel like he's more of a true three. So if we had a more consistent four, or someone who maybe Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert don't play together as much, so we could have someone step in and play a more traditional four lineup, or even a stretch forward where it's not where Jay Crowder can play split between the four and the three. That's what I personally feel like the Jazz need the most. So I'm excited to see Tony Bradley, who is one of our draft picks last year out of North Carolina, his development and how that turns out for Utah.
Yeah. And this, I think, is why you want Tony Bradley to work out well, is because obviously a stretch four is better for the Utah Jazz. I don't think you can really make an argument that a stretch four would not be better for the Jazz than Derek Favors playing the power forward. That being said, the reason that Derek Favors is so important is because he can play backup center, and he's probably the best backup center in the league. And the reason the Jazz are so good on defense is because everybody can play so aggressive on the three-point line, run everybody off the three-point line, and then they don't want to attack the rim because they either have to deal with Favors or Gobert, and then they just have to take these inefficient mid-range jump shots. You know, the only reason the Rockets beat us, like our defense worked, is just they happen to make those mid-range jump shots because they have Chris Paul on their team. And so I think, like, you probably do eventually want to replace Derek Favors with that stretch four. It's just you need someone who can come in to protect the rim, because if you don't have a rim protector coming in off the bench when Gobert comes off, then you're just losing so much ground that you built up, and, you know, you're breaking your defensive identity. And if you're playing, you know, a Rockets or a Warriors, or, you know, even like a Celtics, they can score 12 points in 3 minutes that Rudy Gobert's on the bench. And so you really don't ever want to have a time when there's not a rim protector.
Well, that's why I hope Tony Bradley can step in and play kind of the four and the five. But that's an interesting transition to free agency. Let's talk about that for a little bit as we're wrapping up. As far as the Jazz free agency, They're meeting in Atlanta right now to talk about Derek Favors. They're with Derek Favors. He's from Georgia. I assume Dante Exum is the next person they're going to meet with. It sounds, honestly, because there's a lot, it sounds like the Jazz might just stay put with Favors and Exum and keep all their unguaranteed contracts with Direkbo and Cephalosha. And they might get one other piece. They have that about $8 million mid-level exception. So they might be able to sign one player who maybe come in on like a one-year deal. Like the Suns, for example, signed Trevor Ariza to a one-year $15 million deal. So that way Trevor Ariza can hit the market. 2019, there's going to be a lot more cap room. So he can sign a longer-term deal but still get paid this year. Hopefully the Jazz can sign a one- or two-year deal with somebody like that. But other than that, I don't feel like there's a lot the Jazz are going to do in free agency this year.
I think so. I think, you know, what I think would be good is I think, you know, I'd like to take that mid-level exemption guy. I'd love to get, you know, probably someone who can play small forward, power forward. So, you know, a Joe Johnson mold where they can kind of play that, you know, wing or go in a little bit more. And I think you can get them for that mid-level exemption. I'm okay doing that for 3 or 4 years because I think what maybe happens is that next free agency, that's the one where we try and want to get a star. I think, you know, I think there's been talk of signing Derek Favors to a one-year deal. If you do that and then next year you get rid of him, you get rid of Alec Burks, and the salary cap goes up, that's all you need to happen to be able to have a max salary slot available.
Yeah, so that's going to be really, really exciting. I think that'd be ideal, what you said, having Derek Favors sign a one-year contract and then 2019 really go for it.
Yeah, because there's nobody on the market who can give him a lot of money right now. You know, I'd love for him to be able to get a lot of money, and I think he probably can get that next year. I just don't think it's available this year with how bad of contracts were given out in 2016.
Right, and there's also honestly not a lot of players. Like some people the Jazz were looking at, Glenn Robinson III out of Indiana, he signed with Detroit already. Doug McDermott, who I don't even remember what team he ended up on. He's gone from Chicago to Oklahoma City to New York. He signed with Indiana. There's honestly not a ton of people out there anyway for the Jazz. The big one I want to talk about is Paul George signed a 4-year, 137 max deal to stay in Oklahoma City. And this baffles me for so many reasons. So this is going to be another mini rant for me. So there's something you want to say or a different talk about first. Let's go for that. But
No, I'm interested in this. Just when you're talking about possible guys that the Jazz could get with the mid-level exception, Tyreke Evans is a guy who I know that doesn't sound like a Jazz player, but I do think that's exactly what we need. And I'm wondering if after what happened with the Grizzlies, there's someone who's going to want to give him that much money who can, you know, create the winning situation that the Jazz can. So that's one that I'm looking at if I'm the Jazz.
Yeah, one thing I'm looking at is Brandon Jennings, that guard who plays for Milwaukee. His deal's not guaranteed. Milwaukee hasn't guaranteed that yet. That'd be another thing where it's not necessarily a character fit right away, but it'd be extremely intriguing to have him come in and he could step in and play right. Like he could be the leading scorer off the bench for Utah immediately, I think. So that would be something that I haven't heard his name connected with Utah, but that's something I would love to see possibly happen.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Jabari Parker. They're looking at him. I guess we should probably talk about that, huh?
Yeah, that's interesting because Jabari, I don't know how much we're going to have to pay him because there's no cap room, but also the thing, I don't even know how much Milwaukee wants him because he kind of plays the same position that's really not a position as Giannis does.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like the Bucks want him right now.
So I don't think they want to let him walk for nothing, so they might try to sign his offer sheet, like let's say we tender him something. Like I think for us to get Jabari, we'd have to give up some of like maybe trade Burks and like so we could maybe try to do a sign and trade for him because I think he'd be good. But like with our cap room, especially if we keep Favors and Exum, we'd have to finagle some things to make it work because I think we'd have to sign him to a pretty big deal in order to either make Milwaukee not match it or some way to get him because he's a restricted free agent right now.
Yeah. You know, we might be able to swing it if we cut or if we don't extend Cephalosha and Jarebko. You know, ideally, you know, if Tony Bradley is playing better, I guess we're not going to know this in time before we would need to cut Udo. But I think that we might be able to get him, you know, $15 million if we were able to just not sign Cephalosha and Jarebko. And I think, you know, essentially getting rid of those two and bringing in Jabari, I would be thrilled if we could figure out that.
Yeah, I think Jabari honestly would be perfect. That role you were talking about where kind of three and the four, he can play and guard. He's a pretty good shooter. He's like, I think 38 or 39% he shot this year when he came.
He shot really well from three, yeah.
Yeah, so that'd be huge. Honestly, shooting and I think the biggest things for the NBA right now are if you can shoot and switch on defense, those are the Warriors have made those the most important skills. And that's I think Jabari can do that pretty well. So that'd be something that I would love to happen. One thing I, as far as Paul George goes, I'm so confused by the whole situation, honestly. We can wrap up with this or get close to wrapping up, but I'm just so confused because he didn't even meet with the Lakers. He left Indiana to go to, because he's like, I want to sign with the Lakers. He didn't even give them a meeting. He committed to Oklahoma City. And then it's not even like he signed a 1 or 2 year deal. He signed a 4 year deal. So the Thunder's payroll right now is like $240 million, which they finished fifth and lost in the first round last year. I don't know why the owners would want to pay that high of a – their luxury tax is going to be as high as some team's actual payroll. I don't know why they're going to have a higher payroll than Golden State and Houston mm-hmm. or a team that clearly doesn't work. Like Paul George and Russell Westbrook are stars, but Carmelo – you can't pay him $27 million. Steven Adams is making over $20 million. Like, that's just not a good roster, honestly. And, like, they signed Jeremy Grant to about $9 million a year. So I don't know what Paul George is doing, especially because this is going to be his eighth year in the league. I think he's 2 years away. If he would have waited 2 years, he could have signed a bigger max because he would have had the 10 years of NBA service, which is where you get, like, the most money possible. So I just don't know what anybody in this situation was doing.
Yeah, I do. You know, I think that it doesn't look very good this year. You're definitely right about that. I think the year after that, 2019, when they're not paying Melo anymore, I think you feel much better about this. Because I think once you're not paying Melo, I think you theoretically could figure out a way to bring in a third star. So I think in that sense, it works out really well. And I'm looking at this right now. Sorry, this is a tangent, but Steven Adams made more money last year than Paul George did.
Isn't that sign like a more recent extension with like after the cap jump probably?
Yeah, and that's I'm sure what it was. That's just crazy to me. But anyway, this, you know, as a Jazz fan does not make me happy because I think their potential to add a third star and then be what they really wanted to be all along and have someone who ends up being what Melo was supposed to be, that concerns me. However, seeing, you know, just a small market team bet on their culture, think that they can convince this kid who's dreamed of playing for the Lakers his whole life to stay with the Thunder, and then they get him to sign not a 1-1, but a 4-year deal, and then with the fourth year being a player option. You know, I just think that should give all of us hope. And I think because, you know, I'm sure Oklahoma City's a great place, but it does sort of have the same reputation as Salt Lake City. And so, I mean, there's no way that you're convincing me that if, you know, the Thunder can get Paul George to stay, there's no reason that the Jazz can't keep Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell and get another guy to come in, you know. So I think that seeing this and the way that it worked out should make Jazz fans very hopeful for the future.
Yeah, honestly, I think the way George like stayed, didn't even give the Lakers a meeting, and he just wants to be there. Guys like Rudy who want to be there. I think the biggest thing for the Jazz in that regard is when Joe Johnson signed. So not that was, I think obviously talent wise it was kind of on the back end, but like just that someone of that ability and that reputation signed in Utah and really enjoyed playing there. Which huge.
Yeah, so and the Heat wanted him.
It's gonna be an interesting summer. Let's.
I was just gonna say where do we feel pretty good about LeBron going to the Lakers, or is that a little bit shakier now?
That's the exact same thing I was gonna ask. I think he goes to the Lakers. That's my prediction.
Yeah, that's what I think. I just, you know, I think probably as much for his family as anything else. And I mean, look, like I think if LeBron goes to the finals against the Warriors and he has the young Lakers rather than his old Cavaliers team, then I think that they don't win, but I think they win, you know, a game or two. And so whether or not they get Kawhi or DeMarcus Cousins, or they're not getting Paul George anymore, I think that, you know, they certainly, I think, bring in another star at some point. So probably not this year, but I think the year after that, they end up being very, very good. So that combined with his family wanting to live in LA, I just think that ends up making the most sense for him.
Yeah, I think he ends up a Laker. So
to see. Although I will say the Nuggets are really trying hard to get a meeting with him, and that's, I still think he fits a little bit better with the Jazz than the Nuggets, but I don't know if that's a terrible idea for him basketball wise either.
Well, basketball wise is not, but he'd have to live in Denver, so life-wise, it'd be a terrible idea for him.
I'm sure Denver is a fine place. It's not Salt Lake, but I'm sure it's fine.
Nothing Denver has that's better than Salt Lake.
Yeah. Salt Lake's the bomb.
Including basketball. Sweet. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. Again, this is on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Audioboom. Follow us on Twitter at JacobCowden28 and MattCowden24. The show's Instagram and Twitter is MJDoubleTake. Also, check out our blog. It's mjdoubletake.blogspot.com. Bunch of great articles up there. There's one coming out, I think, next week about where I wrote a lot more about TJ McConnell than I ever thought I would in my life. So check that out. And we're going to be in Hawaii, so I don't know when we're going to figure out. We'll have to talk to you, Matt, about when we're going to record the next show, because we're leaving this week for Hawaii, and I'm going to be there a week and a half about. So we will figure that out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Cool. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. See you guys next time.
Nos vemos.
Nos vemos.